Welcome back to another episode of the Retro Raw Rundown. It is myself, Kenny McIntosh, here with Sandra Ruth R.W. Reinstein to talk about the October 14th, 1996 edition of Monday Night Raw, the go-home show for Buried Alive, the show that in 49 minutes did more for storyline progression than the last 4 months of the current product. It's Monday Night Raw. Sandra, how are you feeling about going back in time like we always do every week?
I love 1996 so far. This is pretty exciting. Like, I'm actually really, really enjoying this. I was hesitant a little bit. Like, I don't even know if I told you this, that I was like, I don't know, do I want to do another show every single week? Like, I was about to message you at one point and be like, maybe we should do every other week or something. And then I saw you put on Twitter that we were doing it every week. And I was like, oh, well, I guess we're doing this, right? I'm really glad that we're doing this every week. It's so much fun. There are so many bonkers things.
Yeah. This is my favorite one to do every week.
Yeah, mine too.
But yeah, so there's tons to talk about. But you told me that last week you made a critical error.
And a critical omission.
Omission, yeah. You left something out. So last week, tell us what was on your mind that you didn't get to share with the universe.
So I realized, and this is of vital importance, right, to everyone, to the world, that they know how distracting are Marlena's nipples in that outfit she was wearing last week. They're just so right out there.
That's pretty much the story of Teri Runnels' career. Like, her nipples are so prominent.
They really are. I mean, like, I know she's not wearing prosthetic nipples, but I wouldn't doubt if she were wearing prosthetic nipples. I mean, we were reaching George Clooney Batman status.
We were. Maybe that's where they got the idea.
Maybe.
Maybe Marlena was the...
Well, I thought that movie hadn't come out yet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Marlena's on TV. Maybe Joel Schumacher was just switching through the channels, saw Marlena and went, those chebs need to be replicated for Batman.
Those nipples look amazing. And wouldn't they look so great on the Batman?
I think we've cracked it.
I think we've
absolutely cracked it. But let's get right into this episode because there's so much to talk about. As always, I'm rewatching. Sandra's watching for the first time. I will go through it and sort of give you my thoughts of watching it again. And then Sandra will ask me all the questions that she has about what in the fuck is going on. And we will assemble a podcast. But thank you for all the feedback. Every week you guys are messaging us, telling us how much you're enjoying it. We are very glad that you are on the ride with us for
it's
this
very
podcast.
Cool. I'm glad people are watching along with us so that they can see the glory of things like the Sultan and the Stalker and Marlena's nipples and...
And the Big Bang Boom Tour, which we're going to get to.
The Big Bang Boom Tour, indeed.
Good God. Okay, so we open up with, again, I mean, I'm probably going to say this every week, but I need to stop. I just love these intros.
They're so good. He's vicious. He shows no remorse. He's stone cold.
Yeah, and he's like, Shawn Michaels, I'm going to whip your ass. Like,
this isn't the good book, son. This is Austin 316, and tonight, Shawn Michaels, I'm going to whip your ass.
Oh, no wonder people loved him. Like, he's just so much better than Shawn Michaels.
He is.
But I think the main thing is that Shawn Michaels, I don't think in this time period is believable in the role he's in. Like, I don't think he looks like a nice guy.
No, he looks like a prick.
He looks like a prick playing a nice guy, you know? He's like, it's like that guy, like, when you were at school, and there was always the kid that, like, he was a little fucking piece of shit, but as soon as a teacher was around, he was like, hello! You know, he just, like, totally turned it on as if, like, oh, I'm the nicest kid in the world.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's Shawn Michaels. But the opening match of this show, I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, because it was Vader having a tune-up match with Phineas Godwin. I actually really enjoyed this, because I thought it was quite a nice hard-hitting match and a nice tune-up for Vader. This is a match that you don't really get to see on Raw today or Lucha Underground and all that. What did you think of this?
You want to know the funniest part of the entire show for me?
Was it when Vader avoided the slop drop by holding onto the ropes?
No, it wasn't. Like, okay, there was plenty about the whole match, but then right before, like, after Vader came out, they cut back to last week with the Vader and Sid standoff, right? Mm-hmm. And they show Psycho Sid coming up behind Vader, and then they say, look, it's Psycho Sid. And then you hear the sound change, and then you hear like hillbilly music starts playing as Sid does the crazy eyes. I was so confused. I was like, what is Sid now, a Godwin? Like, are we going Psycho Sid Invader down on the farm? Like, just watch it back. Just watch that moment, because it's hilarious. He opens his eyes and like wags his finger like nuh-uh, but it's do-do-do-do-do-do like in the background. Oh, it's just
Sid is from Arkansas in real life.
Well, yes, so he, as he states later on when he interrupts the match, he goes, "Hey, fat boy, I'm from Arkansas too."
Sid's so great.
It's just so mental. But so why do the Godwins have a dog with them?
Like, I was gonna say, because like I was gonna bring this up. It's like, so they had, like, you know, they brought goats to the ring, they brought all these different things, but they just brought a dog.
It's just
like
a dog. It's not, I mean, dogs can live on farms, but I mean, it was just a dog that did not look happy to be there. That dog looked very suspicious of this whole situation.
This was a dog that clearly had been sleeping and was picked up to go and do this. It was like, why the fuck am I on Raw?
It's like, what is going on now?
Now, again, do you understand now my absolute horror and disdain for this version of the Godwins theme tune?
Yeah,
isn't Don't Go Messing with the Country Boy much better?
It is much better, definitely.
And we don't get to hear it, and it's on their network.
I know.
Fix it, WWE.
I know, it's ridiculous. You can hear the sound, actually, like the ambient noise changes. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's weird. It's very weird. So one of the big pieces of news that we get during this match is that Jim Ross reveals that him and Kevin Kelly are being replaced on Monday Night Raw as of next week by Vince McMahon. What was your thoughts on this when you heard that Vince was going to be replacing Kevin Kelly and Jim Ross decided that he's just going to come anyway?
I know, because Kevin Kelly said he's been reassigned and he was kind of fine with it. He was like, I mean, I have another job or something. And then what does Jim Ross say to him at some point? He was like, well, don't go looking into real estate anytime soon. You know, you can't trust Vince McMahon. You might just lose your job, basically, was the implication.
I love that JR just goes like, how does your wife feel about this? I'm like, yeah. Just kick a guy while he's down.
I know, poor Kevin Kelly. That's basically what I kept thinking, was just like, Kevin Kelly is so out of his depth here. It might be good that he's being replaced. At one point, and I forget which match it is, but Jim Ross just starts doing play-by-play.
This is when he starts morphing into other versions of himself and just goes off the wall. Then we get, and again, I'm just bringing this up because I thought it was great, the New York City commercial for Survivor Series. Oh my god, so good. Like, it's like basically making it out like the WWF wrestlers are converging upon New York, and this will make New York a much more fun place than it usually is.
Apparently.
And you have, like, you had these really, like, awful things where, like, it'd be, like, a picture of Times Square and, like, Shawn Michaels would be on one of the billboards, like, dancing. And you're like, okay. But, yeah, again, stuff like that is stuff that I think if they did today and made the Survivor Series feel a bit more special in that way would be good.
I think they just don't care about the Survivor Series.
Idiots. Absolute idiots. Then we have JR having an interview with Mr. Perfect.
I think it's different, too, because they had the Hall of Fame banquet around Survivor Series, and now it's WrestleMania, so...
True.
You know, true. That was part of what was making New York so great for the weekend, was the Hall of Fame on the Saturday.
Yes, I guess that's a fair point. That is a fair point. So JR speaks to Mr. Perfect about his match next week with Hunter Hearst Helmsley. JR's pushing him a little bit on whether he's ready. Is he 50%? Is he 100%? Perfect gets a little fired up. What did you think of this interview and the build for this match next week?
I liked it. I had to keep, like, listening closely to make sure that this match was happening. This is happening on Raw next week, not at Buried Alive on Sunday.
Correct.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I thought that I had that right. No, I mean, I like Mr. Perfect. He basically goes on and says, you know, do you see any flaws right here? And what I thought was kind of weird, and I was going to ask you about this, because it's a bit weird that heel JR, right? Like, isn't JR supposed to be a heel now? Heel-ass JR, when he's talking to Mr. Perfect, and Mr. Perfect says, you know, I'm in great shape, I'm perfect, blah, 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 and JR goes, you know, I couldn't agree more, you look like you're in great shape. I was wondering, because I know how you feel about a very clear distinction between heel and babyface characters and commentators, especially. Does it bother you that JR is so supportive of Mr. Perfect? I mean, he does mention at some point on the show that he and Mr. Perfect do commentary together on Saturday mornings, I think he said it
Yes,
was.
because they do superstars, I think. No, it's a challenge. They do one of them anyway. Yeah, you know, it's weird. It's hard because, like, because the JR and Vince thing doesn't go anywhere. That's what makes it more problematic because it seems like it reminds me of, like, remember when Michael Cole did his heel run in 2011?
Yes, that
And
was my first introduction to Michael Cole. Yep.
it's like sometimes he would be this heel character, but other times he would just call the action normally.
Yeah.
And that's what I feel like JR does here. But again, the problem that you brought up on episode one is that JR is pretty much the babyface in the situation. So it kind of just feels like JR is a babyface and he's just like speaking out against his horrible boss. The problem is that the boss is supposed to be the babyface, I think, in this scenario. But it is. I think it is a bit bloody. And like I say, when I was watching it and I was 11, I was quite confused by a lot of it.
Yeah, I mean, it is
So.
kind of confusing. I think if I didn't know a lot of the backstage stuff, because obviously, I know a fair bit of WWF slash WWE history, so I know where it goes or doesn't go in any case.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, I know what is going to happen in the future, but I think I would probably be pretty confused too. I did like Mr. Perfect. My favorite line from Mr. Perfect here was, "All these new generation punks think they're walking around here with their cocky hairdos like they're really something big." Who in the new, like, what cocky hairdos is he talking about? I mean, Steve Austin doesn't even have hair.
And Rocky Maivia hasn't even debuted. There's, you know,
Right?
but the weird thing for me was like, so Mr. Perfect, I want to talk a little bit about. So in 1996, he was, I think, 36 years old.
Okay.
Look at how he was dressed.
Yeah.
He was dressed like a 52-year-old man.
He was. He looks way like, I mean, I guess facially he doesn't necessarily look older than 36, but I mean, just the way he's dressed and carries himself, and he's been out of competition for so long. It seems weird that he's that young when they've put him on commentary and he's been out of action. I mean, you said, did he have an injury or something?
He did have an he had a back injury in 91, and then he came back at late 90. He's been around on and off since then. He did wrestle again for about a year between late 92, late 93, and then you've heard about the Lloyd's of London thing, right?
Oh yeah, you mentioned this. He had like an insurance policy and he couldn't get paid out if he went back to wrestling or something.
Yeah, exactly. So it was one of those things of. Was it worth it for him to come back? Was it not? Etc. What my favorite part of this whole thing was Mr. Perfect's interview. You know, he's kind of like building up next week. What's going to happen when he finally steps back in the ring with Hunter Hearst Helmsley? And JR's kind of questioning, is he 100%? And the way that Mr. Perfect tries to prove that he is 100% is by doing two things. Number one, a light jog around the ring. And then he just leaps over the top rope
Yeah.
to land onto the ground to be like, I can still go over the top rope, folks. Like, I just loved his reasoning or his
His
what's the word?
display, his like feats of strength.
His display to prove that he can still go. It made me laugh a lot.
It
So
is pretty funny.
good on Mr. Perfect.
Mr. Perfect's hair kind of confuses me. Like, how does it work?
Oh, wait till he starts wrestling. Like when he starts wrestling, his hair just is even worse.
I mean, the
It's
ponytail just curls around it. You want to talk about these new generation punks and their cocky hairdos. Like, your ponytail is just something interesting, Mr. Perfect.
out of control. Now, I want you to imagine something, Sandra.
Okay.
Imagine if you were watching Monday Night Raw today in 2016,
Yeah.
and WWE decided to air a promo for a tour. And the promo was interspersed clips of wrestlers and bombs
With
and
lines like,
explosions.
"The World Wrestling Federation is exploding with action, and you can be at ground zero." Actual line from this ad.
The Big Bang Boom Tour, which I can't remember who it was, I'm sorry, but somebody tweeted me about it like, oh, good God, the
Yeah.
WWF have explosions and bombs to promote the Big Bang Boom Tour. But what I will say is, this Big Bang Boom Tour, which I love the name of, I just want to
It's
keep saying
so good. I
it.
know, Big Bang Boom Tour.
It's so good. Look at how good the arena names were, ladies and gentlemen. The Kiel Centre, the Rosemont Horizon, the Municipal Stadiums, all these great names. Oh, I miss the old days.
I know you do. I know you're on your stadium arena name kick thing.
I know. It'll go away soon, don't worry. Up next, we get Jerry the King Lawler being what I thought was an absolutely glorious prick of the highest order. He comes out, he's like being so offensive to alcoholics and to Jake Roberts and, really poor. And then Jake comes out. Now, so when, here's a question. When Jake Roberts comes out, did you get immediately that he was pretending to be drunk? Or
Oh,
did you
yeah.
think, okay, you got it? Okay. So he comes out pretending to be drunk, comes up to get in the ring. Jerry Lawler's kind of like, is this all I need to wrestle? Woo! Happy days. And Gorilla Monsoon comes out, and then Jake Roberts is like subtly telling him, I'm fine, just let me do it. Quick DDT, 1, 2, 3, and then Jake Roberts pours alcohol over Jerry Lawler's face and then puts the python snake over him. What did you think of this this kind of retribution and close of this storyline?
I liked it as retribution and close to the storyline, I guess. Like, I'm still not the biggest fan of this storyline, given where Jake Roberts was in his life and where he would end up. And I still wonder if it was a super great idea. But I mean, I like Jake Roberts finally getting retribution on Jerry Lawler. Something that bugs me about it, though, Jerry Lawler comes out and he's doing all of his super, super offensive jokes about Jake Roberts, right? Like, he is a horrible person. But the commentary is talking over Jerry Lawler, so you can't really hear what he's saying. It's the same kind of thing as when, Farmer Sid music played, because they have to cram so much into 45 minutes of showtime that everything's happening at once and it's all overlapping. And
Yeah.
so you have Jerry Lawler talking to the audience, and we can't necessarily hear all of what he's saying because JR and Kevin Kelly are also talking, and it gets very confusing, and sometimes I have trouble focusing when stuff like that is going on. So I don't know, it's kind of overload, I guess. But I was glad that it didn't have to be a long match.
Yeah, I thought it was really nice that like Jake Roberts got to give Lawler his comeuppance.
Yeah, I think it's funny that they were using the same Jim Beam pint bottle.
That's
You can
true.
tell because like he keeps it in the paper bag, but because I'm me, and of course I did, I rewound it to see what kind of bottle it was, and you can see that it's not a full bottle, and it's the same Jim Beam bottle that they used as a prop before.
Well, also because like, and I don't, I'm not really a big whiskey drinker, so I could be wrong here, but the colouring that went on Jerry Lawler's face did not seem to be how coloured it would be if you actually had whiskey on you.
It could.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if it was or
Because
not,
as
but.
far as I'm aware, Jerry Lawler did not allow himself to be doused with real whiskey.
Oh, so he only doused Jake Roberts with whiskey, but he wouldn't allow himself to be doused with whiskey.
Of course.
All right. What a prick.
But it's interesting because Jerry Lawler might be the last of the great heels in wrestling in WWF slash WWE because he's so awful here.
Oh, yeah.
So like, and it none of like what strikes me is none of it is him trying to be liked or trying to be cool.
Oh, no.
He's trying to be hated, and I kind of admire that in the sense of like, his job is to make people hate him, and he just goes out there and does it, and that's it. Whether you like him as a person or not, I miss that there's guys like that that were just absolute arseholes.
Yeah, I mean, he's very good at being hated. I will say that for him.
Maybe an extension of himself.
Maybe an extension of himself. I will say, oh, during this one, I just have it written down here during this match, but JR's talking more about how, he's gonna sit there on commentary with Vince McMahon and Jerry Lawler, right? He just had kind of a funny line. He said he was gonna sit next to Lawler, a frustrated nightclub comedian who hasn't analyzed a hold in wrestling in 20 years, and a guy, Vince McMahon, who doesn't even know the names of the holds. I'll have to carry the whole darn broadcast on Sunday.
Oh, I love this Jim Ross so much. It's so good.
He gives zero fucks. It's great.
Yeah. Up next, Sandra's favorite
Yes.
storyline in wrestling history. We're back with the real Jesse, the real Double J, Jesse James, to talk again about this match with
The
Shawn Michaels
story
and Jeff Jarrett.
continues.
We keep going back to this fucking match
I
from
didn't really
last year.
understand that I pulled his foot, but I knew something had messed up.
What an idiot.
You're such a simpleton, roadie.
And he talks about, like, you know, they talk about Double J conning Jesse into letting him take credit for the song. And it's like, mate, the song was not as big a hit as we were making out to be here, even though it is stuck in our head forever
My
now.
favorite thing is that they're gonna release a whole new album.
Course they are. Why wouldn't you?
Because the song was just too great and too great a hit, and it's too great a song to just be buried and to be lost to the archives. So they have to release a whole new album.
To
And
be fair,
Jim.
the song is fucking exceptional, to
Oh,
be
it
fair.
is great, and I do sing it in my head constantly, all the time. Like, I mean, I told you the other day I woke up and my first coherent thought were the lyrics to this song. And I was so angry and pleased at the same time. It was very strange.
So talk a little bit. So basically, we get kind of, you know, Jesse James singing some of the song. We've got Jim Johnston with him talking about how great the album's going to
I
be.
love Jim Johnston. I love how he's like, you'll be amazed at the range of what Jesse James can sing.
But talk to me a little bit about your thoughts, because you did message me about this. They tease what you're going to find out next week.
Yeah, they do. Well, I mean, now we're starting to get more into the history of Jesse James, right? I'm so into this, by the way. Because I love that. Who could blame Jesse after what Jarrett promised to do for the young singer when they met in a bar in Nashville just 1 year ago? So he's this kid who Jeff Jarrett found in a bar, you know, down on his luck, whatever. What had he been doing before he was down on his luck? Down on his luck? Yeah. In that bar in Nashville 1 year ago, he was in Desert Storm. This took a turn I did not expect. I didn't expect him to be like a war hero or a
And this
returning
is true.
veteran. No,
This
I
is like
know. Like,
legit.
and I knew that Brian James had been in the military. I knew that about the man, but I didn't expect the real Double J. The real Double J, Jesse James. That's so difficult to say. I didn't expect him to have this military history and for that to be a thing. I'm like, he's the original Steve Cutler.
Yes, he absolutely
Or
is.
maybe he's going to be the original kill shot. Wouldn't that be crazy if he has all this history in the military and like maybe he left someone for dead because that's something on. Okay, so Lucha Underground, that's happening. But.
Imagine if the real Double J Jesse James turned up in Lucha Underground now,
Oh
20
my
years later.
goodness. Wouldn't that be delightful?
Just singing with my baby
Just
tonight.
singing with my baby tonight because I want to hear the range of what he can or cannot sing. Because as far as I know, he knows zero other songs.
I don't think he does know any other ones. I want to ask you about a man, Sandra, and I want your thoughts on him. Just give me every thought that you had. Freddie Joe Floyd.
What even is a Freddie Joe Floyd?
Do you know why he's called that?
No.
It's to do with the Briscoes, and apparently Floyd was like Jack Briscoe's middle name, and Freddie was like Gerald's middle name or something. So they basically like combined the middle names of the Briscoes to create Freddie Joe Floyd.
All right then. That's like
And
Leif Cassidy out of Leif Garrett and David Cassidy.
that one makes a little bit more sense,
Yeah.
sadly. But so I don't know if you know, but this is Tracy Smothers. That's who Freddie
Oh,
Joe Floyd is,
okay.
who's a famous kind of Southern wrestler. And he was one of the guys brought in to be that Jim Cornette talked about of, you know, bringing in some older names who could be kind of a step above a job guy. They could win a couple of matches, but ultimately they're just there to put over the younger guys.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Is it
Thoughts
like
on
what
him?
Rhino was doing in NXT before he became
Yeah,
SmackDown Tag
kind
Team
of.
Champion?
Essentially, yeah. Same thing.
Yeah, makes sense.
But what did you think of Freddie Joe Floyd? Did you like what, you know, his outfit, his hair, the presentation?
I guess I just didn't have that many thoughts about Freddie Joe Floyd because I was too distracted by the fact that Hunter Hearst Helmsley was handcuffing a woman at ringside.
Yeah, okay, talk about that.
So, Hunter Hearst Helmsley has been coming out with these women, and apparently they are his property because this woman, I mean, she didn't look as bothered as most women would probably be to be handcuffed ringside, right? But Hunter Hearst Helmsley comes out with this woman, and then to make sure that Mr. Perfect doesn't steal her, he handcuffs her to the ring because she is his property.
Well, to be fair to him though, what's happened is Hunter Hearst Helmsley brings these ladies to the ring every week,
And Mr. Perfect steals them.
and Mr. Perfect steals them. So he's like, "Well, how can I stop Perfect from stealing them? What I'll do is I will handcuff them to the area in which I need them to stand in, and that will stop Mr. Perfect from stealing them from me." Which, you know, logically, we can't argue with him.
No,
Morally, we can.
but it's like chaining up your bike, right? Like, I guess I'm just not the
I did
biggest fan
not.
of a story where women are property and can be chained up like animals and or inanimate objects.
Now, I did not call the women here a bike. That's the way you want to go down. That's fair. Well,
I didn't say it was a good thing.
this is a different time, Sandra. You know.
Yes, it
It was okay
was.
to handcuff women at this point in time, apparently. Yeah, that bit's weird. But we get Freddie Joe Floyd against Hunter Hearst Helmsley. Hunter Hearst Helmsley seems to have the match in control, and you know he has his lady handcuffed at ringside. And all of a sudden, who comes out but Mr. Perfect? And he somehow has managed to get the key to the handcuffs.
From the security guard, which, by the way, have you noticed that the security guards in this arena are all dressed like park rangers?
Yes, they are. They are. They are.
It's
They are.
very strange. And for some reason, why would a security guard in this arena in Hershey, Pennsylvania, have the handcuffs to Hunter Hearst Helms or have the key to Hunter Hearst Helmsley's handcuffs?
Well, I mean, I guess that's because you need to have the key be in a sort of trustworthy person's hands,
Why
and the
wouldn't he just
security.
have the key?
Well, because what if like he's wrestling and it falls out or something? And he loses it. So if he gives it to the security guard, it's like, well, he can trust the security guard. He's security. It's his day-to-day job.
Not that trustworthy, apparently, because Mr. Perfect was able to sweet talk that security guard, get the key, steal the woman. And the
See, so
handcuffs, by the way. He's not getting those
that's
handcuffs
exactly what
back.
happened.
Or no, the
No,
handcuffs
he
stayed on the ring. That's right, because there was that shot of just the handcuffs. It was a very dramatic camera shot. That was pretty funny.
You're not used to dramatic camera shots yet on this.
Oh no, it's just this one in particular made me laugh because it was just of the swinging handcuffs with the blurry crowd in the back. It was very artistic.
It was good, and so basically, Hunter is about to win his match when Mr. Perfect takes his lady. Hunter runs to the outside to try and go and get his lady back, and Mr. Perfect socks someone right in the mouth, and Hunter gets counted out. A win for Freddie Joe Floyd.
A win for Freddie Joe Floyd. Also, though, something notable here, Freddie Joe Floyd kicked out of the pedigree. Not because of the distraction. He kicked out before Hunter Hearst Helmsley was distracted.
Yeah, that is. I had that written down to talk about next. That was a very bizarre because the pedigree at this point was his finisher. It
It
wasn't
was,
like,
right? Like,
yeah, it was. It wasn't like I mean, it wasn't as iconic as it is today, but it was his finisher. And I'm not quite sure why Freddie Joe Floyd was the one to kick out
I
of
know,
it.
I was like, because I mean, I didn't know that Freddie Joe Floyd was anybody of note, right? Like, he could have been anybody. I can't tell yet who are just jobbers with no name or who are people that I should recognize because I don't recognize people. So, I mean, I didn't know that he was anybody to really pay attention to. And I was like, this guy kicked out of the pedigree? Doesn't that seem like a thing that shouldn't happen? Because I mean, it's either he kicks out and then Hunter Hearst Helmsley is just super stupid for not waiting 2 seconds to win the match, right? But he didn't have it won because Freddie Joe Floyd kicked out, which I thought was really weird. Also, you can tell that Goldust has been here because there is so much glitter ringside. As Hunter Hearst
It's
Helmsley rolls around on the entrance, it's like he just gets covered in glitter.
It's almost like last week's main event happened right before this show
I
started.
know.
By the way, just to clarify, if there is ever an opportunity in the world for me to buy that gravestone that sits in the middle of the aisle, I would buy it in a heartbeat.
I love that gravestone and its logo. Did you notice, this is something I forgot to mention a couple weeks ago. The logo disappeared from the headstone at the beginning of the second episode that we covered, and then it was back by the end of the episode.
Did it?
Yeah, it's really weird.
I never noticed that.
Yeah,
There
well,
you go.
because you know how much I love that
Saunders.
logo.
Yeah, Saunders looking out for it.
I was.
Steve Austin is talking about his match later with Shawn Michaels, but he mentions Bret the Hitman Hart, who is returning to the World Wrestling Federation next Monday night on Raw. What will Bret Hart have to say? Steve Austin is kind of throwing a bit of shade Bret Hart's way, so I guess we'll see where that goes. We all know, but
Yeah.
we'll see. Quick promo for Mr. Perfect and Triple H next week. I love the kind of dictionary definition of perfect
I
being
love
used.
that so much. It made me want to team up Apollo Crews and Mr. Perfect in some sort of video game based on spelling.
2K17, you could do it
I could if
easily.
I knew how to play video games or owned a console.
Let's get Sandra a Kickstarter. So up next, we hear stripper music. And out comes Sunny, looking very nice.
Yep.
And she comes into the ring and she has a present for everyone. It is a massive banner of herself.
Yes. Yep. I don't know if I'd wear those white go-go boots with that fuchsia dress, but maybe that's just me.
It's a minor complaint,
A
really,
minor
isn't it?
complaint. Was this her actual music?
No.
I didn't think so.
No, her real music was I Know You Want Me.
Okay, so that was her theme throughout
Yeah.
WWF then. Okay.
Yes, but I think on this show, I don't know if she did, because it didn't seem like the stripper music was dubbed in. It seemed
Yeah,
like
it
she
didn't
did
seem
come
like it
into
was. So I was wondering if it was dubbed over I Know You Want Me or if this was just different music that they had used for this episode.
it. I think it was just different music used for this episode based on what she was about to do. And I love the fact that Sunny comes out, and she's such an egomaniac that she just comes out to introduce a banner of herself.
She would like to introduce the newest, hottest, sexiest thing going in the World Wrestling Federation, me, Sunny.
And she was legitimately AOL's most downloaded woman in 1996.
I know, isn't that one of her like three talking points?
Yeah, over Pamela Anderson though. That's
Yeah.
big. It's decent.
She's hotter than Pamela Anderson. I'll say
She
it.
is. Not now.
No.
Pamela Anderson has won the race now, but back in the day. Mankind and Paul Bearer are in a graveyard with an umbrella talking about The Undertaker.
This one's in color.
Yep.
The previous ones were black and white, right? I'm not making that up.
No, you're correct.
It was weird. All of a sudden, they were in color. And I swear Mankind has pulled out more hair since the last vignette.
And they have the umbrella.
Yes. Because it is raining in the graveyard now.
I love that they're prepared, They come to a graveyard, but they make sure to bring proper equipment
Yeah.
to stop the rain from getting on them.
Not to dig anything,
None
but
to
they have
dig.
an umbrella.
So that
I love that
happens.
Mankind has a premonition, so I have in my notes, Mankind had a premonition. Because he
Well,
sees that
that's how you
Undertaker's
treat
going to be in the grave.
it. One of my favorite parts of the show is we come back for the next match, and Sunny is on commentary. And she starts kind of like
Creeping on
rubbing
Kevin
herself up
Kelly.
against Kevin Kelly. She's like, "How much money do you make?" And he was like, "I do okay." And she's immediately disinterested
Oh, only
because
all
he only
right.
does okay. Oh, she's so good. We get a match with Alex the Pug Porto. Who cares?
Who is Alex the Pug Porteau? He's just a guy that says the pug on his, gear. It
And
just
he's
says the pug.
far less cute than pugs are.
Yeah.
Which,
If he
so
had
he
a
was
wee
just like,
pug on his gear, that would be pretty cute. But it just says the pug. It's not even a pug's face.
if he brought a pug to the ring, I'd be
Yeah.
all in.
Maybe, maybe there can only be one dog per show and the Godwins, they
That's
already did
true.
it.
The quota had been hit. Alex the
Isn't it
Pug
weird
Porto.
to think that these shows were taped at the same time? So backstage, they have both a goat and a dog for the Godwins.
It's an interesting time to be alive, for sure. But Alex the Pug Porto was basically this guy from the south who was like a pretty decent wrestler, but he was never a name or anything. So nothing really to note about him. I love that Farooq Assad comes out and he looks so serious, Patch Castle laughing at his helmet.
Well, JR even says on commentary, that headgear is embarrassing. Why would you put a headgear on a three-time All-American from Florida State University?
Very true.
I think that headgear is a motivating factor for Farouk.
Oh,
It's just
God.
so bizarre. It's so bizarre. Sunny does detail the amicable split between herself and Farouk, but they're still very good friends, and she still helps him out from time to time. But she has lots of very good friends.
What are you trying to imply?
That's what she said.
You said it with a tone, Sandra. Almost like you were
She said it with a tone as well when she was on commentary.
implying. Were you happy that they went into more detail about the amicable split?
I mean, there weren't really that many more details other than, yes, there was an amicable split. But, I mean, I
There
was
you
glad
go.
that they brought it up, I guess, and that Sunny confirmed the amicable split. I think it's funny how often they say amicable split.
Now, there are people that turn up on Raw that I'm always excited to hear how Sandra feels about and what she thinks of them. So, good God, am I excited right now. Please don't let me down, Sandra. I want to know your thoughts on the promo skills, the outfit, and the general everything of Mr. Ahmed Johnson from his Livewire promo.
Oh boy, Ahmed Johnson. First of all, that
Isn't it
jacket
exceptional?
is something special. It is amazing. It has a huge A and a huge J, and it has some words on it.
Has Johnson down the side of
It
one
has
arm.
Johnson down the side of one arm.
I can only assume Ahmed is down the side of the other.
I hope that it is. We couldn't see it, but I really hope that it is. He has this mustache thing going on. I'm not entirely sure that all of what he said were words.
You've already deciphered the problem with Ahmed Johnson in one.
I understood that Farouk was on the phone talking to him. Ahmed responds. They start getting into this like racial tension sort of conversation, and Ahmed says, you know, it doesn't matter what color you are, you could be clear. And they're talking about being like brothers in the hood or something, but I'm not really sure what the point of all that was. And also, isn't it really funny to picture Farouk in his wee helmet as a gladiator, like in the hood?
On a payphone doing this phone call
On a
to Ahmed Johnson.
payphone doing this phone call to Ahmed Johnson. Like, I like to imagine Farouk wears the helmet at home too.
Course he does. Why
Yeah,
would he
because he's
not?
a gladiator. Ahmed Johnson, what even? What is his deal? Now I understand why Sonny didn't want him on her show.
Now, see, the thing is, I was kind of enthralled in the racial tension thing with them. I
It's
thought
interesting. It's
it
interesting
was
for sure.
very well played out by them, I thought.
And I mean, does this lead to Nation of Domination stuff?
Yes.
Yeah. So I thought that was interesting. I was like, oh, okay, so we're kind of setting the stage. I actually kind of liked Ahmed Johnson here. Like, he was unintelligible, but.
What the thing is, as we go on here, his outfits become monstrous. Like, they are atrocious.
Oh, I'm so excited.
But Ahmed Johnson was insanely got insanely good pops when he comes out at various shows. Like, it's interesting because he's kind of forgotten about now, because later on he does get plagued by injuries and like he just kind of fizzles out. But 96 into 97, Ahmed Johnson was a top guy. In the company for me anyway when I was watching it,
Interesting.
and I also can't wait to see your reaction for. Have you ever seen Ahmed Johnson's ring gear? You've probably seen it in one of the clips.
I have, yes.
Like, he
All of
wears
the
these
knee
big red
pads.
pants. Yeah, he wears
Yeah.
these big red pants, and like every single match he has, the red pants ride up his ass every time, without fail. So look forward to that
Oh, I
coming.
do.
Then we get an Undertaker promo. I'm gonna Sandra may just hate it as always, but I really enjoyed this one because what I liked about it was, you know, the story is that the night after WrestleMania 12, Mankind debuted and he attacked The Undertaker, and he then beat The Undertaker at King of the Ring, and he then took Undertaker's mentor at SummerSlam. So Undertaker has still at this point not really gotten the revenge for any of the shit that Mankind's done to him. And I like that he was kind of talking about, you know, he talked about Buried Alive as if this was going to be the final battle between these two guys. And
well, if you bury someone alive and do a murder, it kind of has to be.
Exactly. But like, that's Undertaker has tried everything else. You know, he's talked about the struggle of dealing with Mankind and how much more evil he's gotten as Undertaker has not been able to defeat him. And now he has Paul Bearer, who has the power of the urn and all this. So like, this is a good culmination of the story for me. I enjoyed it. It's more than just your standard Taker fare, in a way. I remember at the time being quite into it as well. So I also loved the background music. So I've enjoyed these promos that the two of them have done to build this up, especially because, like, when was the last time you saw, like, a pay-per-view where two regular weekly characters weren't in the ring brawling all the time? They were just doing promos to each other.
Yeah, because, I mean, we've gone from the night after the most recent pay-per-view to now the go-home show to Buried Alive. We've not actually seen The Undertaker or Mankind live.
Yeah, which I think's interesting. And they've both been in the sort of... It's almost like they've both been away preparing the whole time.
Yeah.
For this. And
it adds to the mystique of it. I will say that, because this is a lot more effective than Bray Wyatt and Eric Rowan and getting locked in storage cupboards and doing in-ring promos and also having regular matches and, you know, that kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is a lot more effective than that. Less is more sometimes, I'll say. And this promo, I know you loved it. I liked it fine. I thought it was good for what it was. The Undertaker's big purple gloves stand out so much. It looks like he's going to go wash the dishes.
Well, enjoy them while you can, because they're about to leave.
Oh, yeah, you told me he's going to be a vampire or something. I'm so excited to see what that's all about. But The Undertaker, he's talking to the ground, and I mean, he had inflection in his voice, too, so I will give him that.
Yeah, and I think the thing is, you know, if you build up to the go-home show, and that's when he should do his best promo of the bunch, you know?
It's in color. I am wondering, like, he just dug this hole, and then he starts filling it in again at the end of the promo.
He may have had a wee shandy beforehand, you know.
Maybe, you never know. It was a cool camera effect because they had the camera down in the grave, so then it was looking up at the Undertaker and he was like talking down into the grave, and then he's like, "And I will bury you alive," and, you know, buries the camera. And it was a cool effect, but I was like, you just put all that work into digging the hole. Also, the other funny thing about these promos is, like, you have to imagine them alternating at the grave, because they're both at the grave that the Undertaker just dug. So The Undertaker digs the hole and then goes away to have that shandy, and then Mankind and Paul Bearer sit in the grave with the urn and everything and then do their bit, and then the Undertaker wanders back, I guess?
There are a lot of questions about how this plays out.
That's all nitpicking. In all seriousness, I think these vignettes are pretty cool, and, you know, I'll see them live at Buried Alive, I guess.
Yeah, if only we had somewhere you could talk about that. But up next, we have the main event of the evening. It is, as far as I'm aware, I could be wrong, so don't crucify me, folks, if I am. I think this was the first time on television that Steve Austin and Shawn Michaels met in a match. And it was fun.
They did keep touting it as the biggest matchup in the history of Monday Night Raw.
Which, you know, years later you could claim. At this point, I don't know if you would really say that's what it was. But
I was
going to
ask
so.
That because you had said that they didn't necessarily see Steve Austin as the guy, right? And last week when we were recording and you said that Savio Vega and Steve Austin were going to fight, I was kind of confused because I could have sworn in the promo last week that they said it was going to be Steve Austin and Shawn Michaels. I think they were probably promoting Savio Vega versus Stone Cold at Buried Alive, and then
players
got and crossed.
Yeah.
But it occurred to me, like, wow, Stone Cold versus Shawn Michaels, that's a really big match. And that's just on Monday Night Raw, sort of out there. But they did keep mentioning on commentary, you know, this is the biggest matchup in the history of Monday Night Raw, and it was a huge deal. And so maybe they did see more in Stone Cold at this point. They just...
Yeah, I think they were beginning to see it here.
I mean, they had already made him King of the Ring, I guess, so... There was that. I mean,
There was
granted,
that.
we've seen other people win King of the Ring and
Many.
go on to do so much with it, but.
I mean, but the thing is, they only made it a 4-minute match. It was clearly just a kind of a here's a teaser of these two guys wrestling. But yeah, what kind of struck me was that Austin just, and I remember at the time, towards the end of 96, like Austin felt cool and Michaels felt inauthentic. And that was the problem with him as a babyface and with Austin as a heel, is that, you know, it just felt like the two guys were on opposite sides and they should have been cast in opposite roles, really.
It doesn't really Sean just he seems like such a flamboyant prick.
He is here. I mean, he's, as we get into next year and stuff, like when he goes heel, oh, he's so good.
How did Shawn Michaels never become a proper gay icon?
Well, he did do Playgirl magazine.
Well, I'm just saying, like, how is that not more of a thing?
I don't know how that became such a small version of a thing. Like, I'm unsure, but it was, yeah, it was interesting. Because I, here, let me ask you a question, Sandra. You, what age were you in 1996?
I was 11, just like you.
Okay, well, no, I was actually 9. Don't make me older. But you know, you were 11. You were older than me because you
Oh,
are.
sure, uh-huh, yep.
And shush. And you, when you were 11, let me ask you, because when you were 11, Sandra, like, I don't want to go too far into this because this is a podcast that we don't get, you know, filthy on or anything. But when you're 11, you're starting to develop feelings. You know what I mean? Starting to want to check things out.
What
Would you have
things,
bought,
Kenny?
well, many things that come into your mind, but would Playgirl magazine have been a thing that you would have purchased at your nearest convenience store? Do you know any women that purchased Playgirl magazine?
Nope.
So who would buy a Playgirl magazine?
Gay men. Absolutely 100%.
So why is it called Playgirl?
I don't know.
Because, like, because this is a whole weird, but here's the weird thing, right? So, because straight men love lesbians, right? The idea of like two women is great, right? But straight women don't seem to love the idea of two men in that same regard. It's a very weird kind of
Not
thing.
typically.
Not typically. There are exceptions to the rule. There are dirty bastards everywhere. Let's not try and, you know, name and shame. But yeah, I mean, who? I don't know who. I don't know why it was thought of as an idea that, like, right, Shawn Michaels has just won the WWF Championship. You know, we need to make sure that he becomes the guy. Let's make him do Playgirl magazine.
It's bizarre. I mean, as he's wearing all of his shiny mirrors and hats and dancing around like a mad fool, like, Shawn Michaels is an incredible gay icon.
Move over, Cher. HBK is coming through. So, in spite of Shawn
He's
Michaels and his
just a
gay eye,
sexy boy.
partly. So, I always remember for whatever reason, and it would have been around this time. I remember my mum saying that she was attracted to Shawn Michaels, and I was like,
Really?
no, you will marry Bret Hart, and he will be my father.
Can you imagine? Wow.
Well, hindsight.
Yeah.
But, oh yeah, I couldn't have imagined anything worse than my mum shagging Shawn Michaels. Oh, anyway, so Austin HBK happens, but in the end, Vader and Sid interfere, and so does Savio Vega actually.
Yeah,
And
Vader comes out to attack Sean, so there's a DQ. Vader and Austin beat up Sean, but then a wild Savio Vega appears because he's facing Austin on Sunday, and why not? This brings out Sid, who had been bouncing around backstage. They did cut to an inset of Sid at one point, and does he just spend his time in the locker room bouncing up and down,
I like to
jogging in
think so.
place? Like,
I like to think so.
what even are you doing, Sid?
I love Sid. So yeah, so we get all these kind of interferences, but the most interesting part of the interference is that from I can't remember exactly how it happened. You probably remember better than me, but like Sid gets flung into Sean, or Sean gets flung into Sid, and they think that the other one has hit them,
Yeah, I think
So
Sid gets
briefly.
flung into Sean because then they have that standoff. And Sid, I swear he's looking over Sean Michaels' head during the entire time that they're having the conversation. Because, and he's making all these wild gestures, and it looks like something you would do in like mime improv class or something. Like, oh, I am making gestures and having a conversation. He's not even looking at Shawn Michaels. But then they eventually resolve their differences, fling Steve Austin over the top rope, and then do a chest bump to end the show. Which requires Shawn Michaels to jump up to chest bump Sid. It's very bizarre.
How do you feel about the kind of ethos that they have at this point of ending shows with kind of chaos going on?
Yeah, it
Because they
seems
don't
like
tend to do that
matches
now.
don't end. So, I mean, well, I guess Vader versus Shawn Michaels did end. They had an
It
actual
did.
pin situation. But
But even then, when that finished, didn't Sid come out afterwards?
yeah.
Yeah. So like,
Everybody always comes out.
how do you feel about that? Does it make you more intrigued, less intrigued? Do you like the chaos at the end? Do you prefer more kind of clean endings to shows?
I like it well enough. I guess I don't have strong feelings toward or against it. It's different. It's not so much what we see now, which is fine. I think it feels a little more spontaneous, even though a lot of it doesn't make that much sense because everybody just seems to run out like a lot. So it's feeling a little too standard almost. Like
Okay.
now how a lot of times we have shows end with, someone standing in the ring staring and holding up a belt or something. And that happens a lot in nowadays product, right? In 1996, it seems like everyone just interferes and interrupts and appears for reasons. Like Razor and Diesel are standing there in the entrance ray. Like, why? Why are Razor and Diesel there? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Because the funny thing is you've got basically Sid and Vader and Sean, and you've got Austin and Savio Vega. So you're building up the two of the matches for Sunday,
Yeah.
and then you have Razor and Diesel standing at the aisleway.
And it makes some sense that Vader would come out to attack Shawn because Vader's gonna be trying to be number one contender and he feels like he's the uncrowned champion anyway because he has a victory over Shawn Michaels. So that kind of makes sense. But then Razor and Diesel are just sort of standing there taking
Yes.
notes. I don't know.
It's something. Overall for this show, we're now all the build to Buried Alive is done. What did you think of this show?
I liked this show. This was fun.
Favorite part?
Hillbilly Farmer Sid. Absolutely. It's the thing, like, I keep giggling about it. Like,
What I've also managed to do, though, Sandra, I wanted to break this news to you on air. I have
okay.
a surprise for you. I have managed to track down online all the episodes of Livewire. So I'm going to send you the one for October 19th to watch. And the special guest on that episode of Livewire is Stone Cold Steve Austin. So we can kind of on our own time watch a bit of Livewire. We're not going to podcast about it because that is just mental to start podcasting about two different shows. But what we'll do next week on the October 21st episode is we might kind of
Well, we can
spend 5 minutes.
reference it.
Yeah, we can spend 5 minutes talking about Livewire a little bit because Livewire is only really a good show till the end of 96 and then they kind of turn it into a recap show.
Oh,
So
gotcha.
we've only got a little bit of time on that. But we are going to cover Buried Alive. We're not going to tell you how or why just yet, but stay tuned. We are going to cover it. And then we'll be back next Friday for another Retro Raw rundown. We cover the night after Buried Alive, where we have the Mr. Perfect and Hunter Hearst Helmsley match, the return of Bret the Hitman Hart, and the fallout from Buried Alive, which should be fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I really have never, I've not seen a pay-per-view from this era, at least not that I recall. I've seen probably match. I know that I've seen matches from this era, but I don't think I've actually like sat through an entire 1996 pay-per-view. So it'll be an interesting experience, and it's only 2 hours long and not like five.
Exactly. So, Sandra, you are the person who's learning the most here. So, I'm gonna let you choose the outro song. Who would you like to leave the people with for 1 week?
Oh man. On
While
this
you're thinking
show?
about that,
I'm just a
while you're thinking
little.
about that,
Yeah.
Just to let people know, you can find Sondra on Twitter at SondraRuthRW. You can find me at KennyMC1985. You can find our brand Inside_TheRopes. And you can find Shawn Michaels at The Shawn Michaels to ask him about being a gay icon and see what happens. Sondra, what have you chosen for the people to listen to as we leave them?
I think Mr. Perfect's theme.
So we will leave you with that, and next week we will see how he fares in his return to action. Thank you for listening, everybody.
Bye.